Johnny, I think that one of the things is that people keep looking to government for the answer, and government's the problem. Oh, yeah. You, a moment ago, you asked, you know, about people and feeling not only confused, but
right.
Low and down in America. First of all, the American people, if they would just take a little inventory and look around, you triple our troubles, and we're better off than any other people on Earth. And we've asked so much of government, and we've gotten in the habit over the last 40 years of thinking that government has the answers. There's very little that government can do as efficiently and as economically as the people can do themselves. And if government would shut the doors and sneak away for about 3 weeks, we'd never miss them. Our biggest problem is that we have built a permanent structure of government, federal, state, and local. The permanent employees, and they've come to the place that they actually determine policy in this country more than does the Congress of the United States.
Thomas Paine Podcast.
on a Tuesday, right? Is it Tuesday, the day after 4th of July? Yeah, that's right. Well, we've been busy here in the studio with shows for the last 2 days, and we had a hot wire we just released a few hours ago on the 4th of July evening, and the day before that, on the 3rd of July, we had a big 4th of July special that we released, and you can listen to that on all the Thomas Paine podcast platforms, etc., on Paine.tv, the Paine.tv app. A little 4th of July music, perhaps not traditional, but just the same. Elvis Presley doing Chuck Berry. And I sat down with the Young Bucks this holiday weekend. We did have a little bit of a break Friday into Saturday. And we watched the Chuck Berry movie Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, which is it's fantastic live footage of Chuck Berry playing with Keith Richards and so many other folks. It's just a fantastic sit down. And of course, we had a couple cold ones, a little bit of a break, and then back to work, just like many of you folks. Some folks get a break, some folks don't. It's a very busy time of year for us here. As we enter the second part of the year, that's what July is to us. July starts the third quarter and the fourth quarter, just like financial markets. That's how I mark it. After almost 10 years at Citi, that's how I mark the years off. I go by quarters because we went by quarters at Citi, and that's what we do now. And have a unique approach, I guess, compared to other folks, but that's how we do it. So the promised land, folks, we start off listening to Reagan, and we're coming off the 4th of July. How much do you know about the founding fathers? Was Thomas Paine even a founding father, considered a founding father? Well, that's up for debate. We do know the folks who did sign the Declaration of Independence. Paine was not one of them. Those folks are considered, no doubt about it, founding fathers. But how much do we know about the launching of this country and the founding fathers? Well, we're going to turn to an icon to explain it to us. And I wanted to lead off with this video, but I said we'll do a little intro first. I don't want to make anybody say, is this the right show? This just seems way classy. This seems too classy for Paine. Well, listen to Paul Harvey. Listen, we got a monster show for you. We got Dr. Vernon Coleman at the end with just a blowtorch episode. It's just amazing. Probably the most censored doctor in the world, and we'd like to give his say whenever we can, and that is a new video. He had announced with great anticipation that that would be coming out, and he was working on it. So we have that, and we have many other videos for you, and we have content. And we have Paul Harvey, we have Elvis Presley, we have Chuck Berry, and we have you. Most importantly, you. Wouldn't be possible without you. Let's try to keep you enlightened and keep you engaged and keep you on the move as far as learning how this thing all started. And you have to know your history if you want to know where you're going, because if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. Let's go to Paul Harvey talking about Independence Day, talking about our founding fathers, and buckle up. You're going to learn something here. I did. Let's go to the videotape.
Americans, the how and the why of our beloved republic are so much better known and understood than the who. The United States of America was born in 1776, but it was conceived 169 years before that. The earliest settlers had watered the New World with much sweat. They had built substantial holdings for themselves, for their families. And when the time came to separate themselves from a tyranny an ocean away, at best it meant starting all over again after the ravages of war. Researching what you're about to hear gave a whole new dimension to my reverence for our nation's first citizens. All others of the world's revolutions, before and since, were initiated by men who had nothing to lose. Nothing to lose. Our founders had everything to lose and nothing to gain, except one thing, Hello, Americans. I'm Paul Harvey. You remember the cherry tree fiction. A long time after you have forgotten the more earth-shaking, history-making episodes in the life of George Washington, you have misplaced in your memory the details of Ben Franklin's statesmanship, but you remember his flying a kite. Joyce Kilmer was a great military hero. But the only thing you personally recall about him is his poetic tribute to trees. Maybe of this current decade, that which will be remembered best will not be its wars and its moon rockets or its crumbling frontiers or the giants who lived and died. Maybe all that'll survive to linger in the day-by-day vocabulary of generations yet unborn may be the songs of a Memphis minstrel or the reincarnation of electric automobiles. But for any eve of the 4th of July, I, Paul Harvey, do herewith bequeath unto you something to remember. You may not be able to quote one line from the Declaration of Independence at this moment. Henceforth, you'll always be able to quote at least one line. It's in the last paragraph where you will recall when I remind you, it says, "We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." In the Pennsylvania State House that's now called Independence Hall in Philadelphia, the best men from each of the colonies sat down together. This was a very fortunate hour in our nation's history, one of those rare occasions in the lives of men when we had greatness to spare. These were men of means, well-educated, 24 were lawyers and jurists, 9 were farmers, owners of large plantations. On June 11, a committee sat down to draw up a Declaration of Independence. We were going to tell the British fatherland, no more rule by redcoats. Below the dam of ruthless foreign rule, the stream of freedom was running shallow and muddy. And we were going to light a fuse to dynamite that dam. This pact, as Burke later put it, was a partnership between the living and the dead and the yet unborn. There was no bigotry. There was no demagoguery in this group. All had shared hardships. Jefferson finished a draft of the document in 17 days. Congress adopted it in July, and so much is familiar history. But now, King George III had denounced all rebels in America as traitors. Punishment for treason was hanging. The names now so familiar to you from the several signatures on that Declaration of Independence, the names were kept secret for 6 months for each knew the full meaning of that magnificent last paragraph in which his signature pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. 56 men placed their names beneath that pledge. 56 men knew when they signed that they were risking everything. They knew if they won this fight, the best they could expect would be years of hardship in a struggling nation. And if they lost, they'd face a hangman's rope. But they signed the pledge. And here is the documented fate of that gallant 56. Carter Braxton of Virginia, wealthy planter, trader, saw his ships swept from the seas. To pay his debts, he lost his home and all of his properties and died in rags. Thomas Lynch, Jr., who signed that pledge, was a third-generation rice grower, aristocrat, large plantation owner. After he signed, his health failed. His wife and he set out for France to regain his failing health. Their ship never got to France, was never heard from again. Thomas McKean of Delaware was so harassed by the enemy that he was forced to move his family 5 times in 5 months. He served in Congress without pay, his family in poverty and in hiding. Vandals looted the properties of Ellery and Clymer and Hall and Gwinnett and Walton and Hayward and Rutledge and Middleton. Thomas Nelson, Jr. of Virginia, raised $2 million on his own signature to provision our allies, the French fleet. After the war, he personally paid back the loans, wiped out his entire estate, and he was never reimbursed by his government. In the final battle for Yorktown, he, Nelson, urged General Washington to fire on his, Nelson's, own home, which was occupied by Cornwallis. It was destroyed. Thomas Nelson, Jr. had pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. The Hessians seized the home of Francis Hopkinson of New Jersey. Francis Lewis had his home and everything destroyed, his wife imprisoned. She died within a few months. Richard Stockton, who signed that declaration, was captured, mistreated, his health broken to the extent that he died at 51. His estate was pillaged. Thomas Hayward Jr. was captured when Charleston fell. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside while she was dying. Their 13 children fled in all directions for their lives. His fields and grist mill were laid waste. For more than a year, he lived in forests and caves and returned home after the war to find his wife dead, his children gone, his properties gone. And he died a few weeks later of exhaustion and a broken heart. Lewis Morris saw his land destroyed, his family scattered. Philip Livingston died within a few months from the hardships of the war. John Hancock, history remembers best due to a quirk of fate rather than anything he stood for, that great sweeping signature attesting to his vanity, towers over the others, one of the wealthiest men in New England. And yet he stood outside Boston one terrible night of the war, and he said, "Burn Boston, though it makes John Hancock a beggar, if the public good requires it." So he too lived up to the pledge. Of the 56, few were long to survive. 5 were captured by the British and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes from Rhode Island to Charleston sacked, looted, occupied by the enemy, or burned. 2 lost their sons in the army. 1 had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 died in the war from its hardships or from its more merciful bullets. I don't know what impression you had of the men who met that summer in Philadelphia. But I think it's important that we remember this about them. They were not poor men. They were not wild-eyed pirates. These were men of means. They were rich men, most of them, and had enjoyed much ease and luxury in their personal living. Not hungry men, certainly not terrorists, not irresponsible malcontents, not fanatical incendiaries. These men were prosperous men, wealthy landowners. They were substantially secure in their prosperity. They had everything to lose. But they considered liberty, and this is as much as I shall say of it, they had learned that liberty is so much more important than security, that they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And they fulfilled their pledge. They paid the price. And freedom was born.
Those are inspiring words, folks, no matter how you chop them up. Plain and simple. It's hard not to be inspired listening to that. And, you know, it's another fine example. I think we don't stress it enough. Your so-called government, King George, etc., you're supposed to get something in return for you giving and giving and giving. You're supposed to get something back. It's supposed to be part of the deal. Government's supposed to protect you and or whatever. So many other things, right? When it fails to do that, there's no bargain here, right? Taxation without representation, Declaration of Independence, we're right back to where we started from. Forget about all the technology, all the everything, the internet. Tech moguls, tech companies, right back where we started from. 1700s. Taxation without representation. Important to point that out. There's supposed to be something in return for us always giving and them always taking. Supposed to get something back besides guff, hassle, threats, stealing our rights. This is why it no longer works. This arrangement no longer works. It's doomed to fail. You know why? It already has failed. It already has failed. Few people realize that. You do. or you're on your way to realizing it. You listen to Paul Harvey sit there, another national gem sit there, and talk about this stuff. And at least I was sitting there scratching my head saying, boy, what the hell happened here? Well, the founding fathers knew these assholes will come back around because it's human nature. And they're out of control. Way out of control. Biden is completely off his fucking rocker. And the folks he represents as well. And people say, I know what you're saying. When are you going to talk about the shooter? Start that over. I don't like the way that transitioned. I'm not going to cut it out either. We're not going to talk about the shooter. I'll sum it up by one of the young bucks here today. We were working our breaking our fucking asses here today. One young buck, two young bucks walk into a bar. One young buck says, what do you want to do on the shooter, chief? And the other young buck says, I just spent $125 on gasoline. I'll give a flying fuck about the shooter. And the country doesn't either. Country doesn't either. That's the way it is. These are, I hate to break the news to people, okay? These are kitchen table items that matter to people. What really matters out here matters to the media, of course. They want to pound a square peg into a round hole, et cetera, to get you to pretend like you should care about it. I mean, there's shooters all the time. There's people being gunned down every fucking hour in Chicago. Media doesn't care about it. They don't care about black-on-black crime. They only care when they can frame Whitey as a national menace. And we don't play that game on here, so we're not going to have anything. We could have plenty. I mean, the guy's a sick guy. We get all the videos here. We get all the information. We get all the clearinghouse information from a number of different sources. Who believe that we are interested in that. We certainly are not interested in that for the most part, unless it plays into a larger picture. It does not play into a larger picture because the Supreme Court just ruled and gave more rights, gun rights, to its citizens. Now we'll see what Congress does. Doesn't matter anyhow, like I said. Whether you have a gun or you don't have a gun, or it's legal or it's not legal, you think these guys give a shit? These criminals care if their guns are legal? They don't care. They don't care. And if you're going to protect your family too, right? The fuck you care about gun laws for when the chips are down. Believe me. In the dark, the cops ain't coming. You got to protect your family. The last thing on your head is coming through a fucking book to find out what your rights are. And I've said it before. You're either going to use it or you're not. Plain and simple. You've already made it up your mind. You either have the capacity, forget about capacity of magazines, your capacity to protect your family. You're either going to do it or you're not. And so some staged shooting on July 4th, these guys can throw whatever they want. Don't tell me that. Don't give me the bullshit. That this stuff isn't contrived. Everything is fucking contrived. Everything is contrived. If these things were natural, you'd have other targets. You'd have politicians and other folks, the people who are fucking things up, they would be targets more often. But they're not. Who are targets? Kids. Kids in a school are targets. Citizens at parades are targeted. It's contrived. The odds don't match up. for it to be natural, for it to be grassroots. Simply, the odds don't match up. You look at the numbers. You look at probability. You look at the odds. Good investigator would have to discount the fact that this is far from grassroots, far from natural. It's contrived. And it can be contrived by any fucking buddy, any group, whatever. It doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is that it's contrived. At strategic times, for strategic reasons. Just like every fucking other thing in this country that's considered a massive disaster. Contrived. It's all a fucking scheme. Are you catching on? Are you catching on? You better catch on for the sake of you and your loved ones and your future. The faster you understand that you've been a mark your whole life, the better off you're going to be. I'm not going to go into a big... I don't have time to preach tonight. We are too fucking busy and we're too loaded up. We are too loaded up. And it's going to be hard to beat this show for the rest of the week. It really is. That's how fantastic it is. We're just loaded up on all fronts. What do we got next? Oh, well, we go from Paul Harvey talking about the founding fathers and their wisdom, etc., to this idiot.